I will open the Joint Committee on Ways and Means for June 29th, 2017. My apologies to the members of the audience, and my apologies to members of the House for how long this meeting has been delayed. We will still stay on our current schedule. We will go to 1 o'clock, and then we will recess until 5, and we'll see how many bills we can get through. The first item on the agenda is HB 2304, relating to traditional health workers. I will go to my co-chair, Representative Nathanson.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I move that House Bill 2304 be returned to the President's desk without recommendation as to passage for referral to another committee.
Okay. Any discussion of the motion? Any objections to the motion? Hearing none, motion carries. We'll go on to Senate Bill 201 relating to salary of employees of universities with governing board under the Oregon Public Service Retirement Plan. It's conflict amendment. Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Colleagues, Senate Bill 201 is a narrowly defined revision to the public employees retirement statute. A small group of public university employees hired on or after August the 29th, 2003, and working out of state have had Oregon Public Service Retirement Plan contributions made on their behalf by universities. Universities recently learned that under this PERS retirement plan, that employee salary not taxable in Oregon is ineligible for determining PERS contributions and benefits. The measure before us allows these select employees' total compensation to be considered Oregon taxable income for the purpose of a PERS benefit. The Joint Committee on Ways and Means previously approved this bill, but it has passed the Senate. The A2 amendment resolves conflicts with SB 54 by clarifying provisions around public universities with governing boards. Yes. I recommend Senate Bill 201 be amended by the dash A2 conflict amendment and reported out due pass as amended.
Discussion?
Madam Co-Chair?
Yes.
So, in common language, Senator Johnson, do they get PERS? They do not get PERS? Is it just counted on their PERS that they're going to get is just earned income in Oregon?
I'm going to ask the professional staff to come forward because this is complicated and I don't want to make a mistake on the record.
Thank you.
Discussion. Good afternoon. Mr. Co-Chair, Madam Co-Chair, members of the subcommittee, Representative, they would receive their full PERS benefit. They are making their full PERS contributions that universities are for this select group of employees. However, going forward, employees are being notified that that they would no longer receive any new employees would no longer be eligible to have their receive the benefit or have their taxes withheld for out-of-state work.
Follow up, Madam Chair. Follow up.
Yes,
Mr. Chair, Co-Chair. So, John, is this a mistake we've made? And now they're getting—is this like the athletic director and all that? Or we're going to give award PERS based upon outside the state of Oregon salary?
Mr. Co-Chair, and members of the subcommittee, Representative, this was an oversight by the universities. They had these group of employees working out of state, and they were making their retirement contributions to PERS based upon their entire salary rather than what was taxable in Oregon. And so this remedies this for this small group of employees. But going forward, the universities will then be conforming to the law as it was written.
Can follow up, Mr. Co-Chair?
Yes.
Can you give us an estimated money of how much this is going to? I'm sure it doesn't affect much tuition, but I'm sure it's another.
Mr. Co-Chair, members of the subcommittee and representative, the universities provided an estimate of the contributions that have thus far been made of a little over $400,000, $416,000, affecting 68 employees.
If I might comment for the record, colleagues, this is basically a situation when we put in place OPServe in 2003. some of that debate occurred in a relatively short period of time, and amendments were coming in like amendments are coming in now. And so I don't think there was a realization that the universities had some employees that actually worked outside the state. So those particular employees, the 68, and there are only 68, and there will only be 68, have been told that they have the normal benefits under OPSERP, which the universities have been paying for all this time. We're just trying to get this correction. If you don't get this correction, I think it would be just fine for them to join in a class action suit against the universities for not for promising them benefits that they didn't have. So this is the easiest way to correct it. These costs have already been paid into the PERS system. It's no new cost to the universities and no new impact on tuition.
Yes.
So, yes, Representative.
Can I make a follow-up, Mr. Coates? Thank you, Mr. Coates, here.
Yes.
Committee members and the public, I think this is an embarrassment. And I've worked hard in many sessions with the PERS board. And to me, this is the PERS responsibility. This shouldn't have lasted this long. The PERS board has told me that their objective, let me correct that, the director of PERS has told me that their job only is to, when I try to look at things to help the taxpayers, they say their job is only to be sure that people get the money they deserve. These people did not deserve this money, and we're doing it so we don't, the universities don't face further legislation against them, litigation against them, and I'm really disappointed in the PERS board letting this go this long. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
Okay. Any further discussion? Any objections to the motion? Representative Wisnett? Seeing no others, motion carries. Close that work session. Open a work session, HB 3355, relating to prescribing psychologists. This is a conflict amendment. Representative Smith Warner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Colleagues, House Bill 3355 authorizes the Board of Psychologist Examiners to issue either full or conditional certificates, permitting licensed psychologists with certain experience and education to prescribe drugs that are used in mental health treatment, excluding opiate-based narcotics. The Joint Committee on Ways and Means previously approved this bill, and it passed the House. The B-20 amendment resolves conflicts with House Bill 2319, which merged the administrative functions of the Board of Psychologist Examiners with the Board of Licensed Professional Counselors and Therapists. I recommend House Bill 3355 be amended by the -B-20 conflict amendment and be reported out due pass as amended.
Okay. Discussion. Objections to the motion. Seeing Senator Steiner Hayward, Senator Thompson, Senator Winter, Senator Johnson. Seeing no others, motion carries. Close that work session, open work session. HB 2296 relating to processes. Excuse me.
Mr. Chair, I shot my hand up too late.
Okay.
On 3355.
Okay. I will do this because it's probably easier to do it now than at the end of the session. Representative McLean, is there? Do you wish to? Are you requesting to change your vote on 3355?
Well, I think you marked me down, Mr. Chair, as a yes vote.
Yes.
And I am a no vote.
Okay. Can that be recorded, Mr. Rocco? Okay. Thank you very much.
All right.
That work session is closed. Open a work session, HB 2296, relating to processes affecting the physical condition of wells. Senator Frederick.
Is this a -18?
Mr. Chair, House Bill 2296 increases the amount of surety bond or letter of credit required to be filed with the Water Resources Commission by licensed water well constructors from $10,000 to $20,000. The bill also increases the amount of surety bond or letter of credit required by non-licensed persons constructing a well, water well on property that they own from $5,000 to $10,000. It increases the permit fee for those persons from $25 to $500 and removes the provision requiring a permit by those persons only when constructing, altering, or converting a well by means of a well drilling machine. The additional revenue resultant from the fee increase to non-licensed landowners is anticipated to be $28,500 in the 2017-18 biennium and $38,000 in the 2019-21 biennium. The Natural Resources Subcommittee recommends House Bill 2296 be reported out, do pass.
Discussion of the motion. Senator Johnson.
Thank you. I'm trying to understand what problem we're solving with this legislation.
Do we have any of our folks here? We do. Okay, thank you.
Co-chairs and members of the committee, for the record, Raquel Rancier, Senior Policy Coordinator with the Oregon Water Resources Department. Chair Johnson, this bill applies to really two components. There's well drillers and landowners that choose not to use a licensed well driller. And the first part of this bill addresses basically increasing the bonding requirements associated with if they choose to construct or repair or abandon a well. And so it's changing those because essentially they're not really right now enough to cover the cost of repairing a well if there is something that does go wrong. So we're proposing to double both of those, and that's what the bonding piece is. The bonding is $10 per $1,000. So currently for a landowner, this proposes to increase the bonding requirement to from $5,000 to $10,000. The bonding companies require that there be a $100 minimum. So today, a private landowner who chooses not to use a licensed well driller that has the expertise and experience, they post a bond for $5,000. That costs them $100. And this proposes to increase that to $10,000. They'll still be paying $100 for that. For the well drillers that are licensed, this would increase it for them as well from $10,000 to $20,000. So they're paying $100 today. They'll be paying $200 if this bill were to pass. And again, that does help with essentially repairing a well should something go wrong with it. The other part of the bill is associated with these landowners, again, that choose not to seek the expertise of a licensed well driller. And what that does is we essentially end up having to tutor them on how to properly construct a well. And so we're proposing here to increase that fee from $25 to $500. And that's because this fee hasn't been increased since the 80s. And second, what we found is that it costs in staff time about $500 to $3,000 in staff time to assist these landowners that choose to do this on their own. So this is seeking to recuperate some of those costs. I know that there was some questions about how our current program is supported. And our well construction program is supported both by start card fees as well as by some general fund. And we currently, this bill isn't going to probably bring in much revenue, but it'll help to some extent. So currently we have actually six positions that are authorized for well inspectors. We only have five of those positions filled right now. And one of those is actually half-time. So this is essentially focused at making sure that private landowners, particularly that choose not to use a licensed well driller, that they can continue to get the expertise of the department as they do this, and that we're protecting not only them, but future owners of that property, as well as people around them. And that the two issues that really come up when you have this issue, or when you have a misconstructed well, is one, potentially contamination, and two, commingling of the aquifers. So those are the two issues that we're trying to prevent by having folks have properly constructed wells.
Follow?
Senator Johnson.
I'm struggling with these draconian increases. I'm struggling to understand whether this is going to go into a reclamation trust account, or whether because the department has failed to keep up with costs since the 1980s, which I just think is unbelievable, that these are going to be fees to run the agency. So which is it, a reclamation trust account, or just because we didn't engage in best business practices, we're making it up with these monstrous increases?
Co-chairs, Chair Johnson, this doesn't go into a reclamation fund. This does go towards staff resources. And so, no, this fee hasn't been increased since the 80s.
Okay, thank you.
Any additional discussion? Objections to the motion? Okay.
Yes.
Please note Thompson, Gerard, Winters, Johnson, McLean.
I'm looking at Senator Hansen.
And motion carries.
We're good.
That's what happens when you don't raise fees for 30
years.
Okay, close out work session, open a work session. 2661 relating to long-term care referral. Senator Winters.
Thank you. Senator, House Bill 2661 requires persons providing long-term care referrals to register with and pay a $750 fee to the Department of Human Services every 2 years. The bill also provides definition for this industry and imposes certain requirements on referral agents. These include rules around what information must be disclosed to clients, compensation practices, and sharing of clients' information. Agents must also demonstrate to DHS that they meet requirements, have liability insurance, and submit to background checks. The recommended amendments appropriates $57,401 general fund and increases other funds expenditure limitation by $56,250 for DHS to implement the program with two part-time positions. Free revenue will help cover program costs. Your Human Services Subcommittee recommends House Bill 2661 be amended by the Dash 11 amendments and be reported out to past colleagues. The referrals, and so it's not confusing, is actually a consumer protection program. When seniors need long-term care solutions, usually following major illnesses, injury, or other life-altering changes, often they look to long-term care referral agents and for the help. These are different types of agencies that are doing this work in Oregon. They're local agents and they may offer local tours. There's also online agents which sometimes don't offer good referrals. Also, online service may provide a list of facilities that the family can tour and make decisions. They also may get a remuneration back from the facility that they refer to. This bill will assist in two things. One, to make certain that we've got a registry. Two, that we make certain that we are also putting some sideboards around it and to create some standards with this particular bill, and to make certain that there are the protections in place. I urge your support of this particular piece of legislation.
Discussion of the motion before the committee.
Thank you,
Representative Wisner.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Good Senator Winters. In your pony, it talks about DHS will set a renewal fee up to $750 by rule. I don't understand. I thought the legislature had to approve the fee. Why are they setting a renewal fee of up to, what is that's confusing, is that?
Well, there's a fee every 2 years of $750 in order to pay for the cost of running the program. And that's what both the stakeholders and the agency determine as to what they would be required in order to continue the operation.
Mr. Co-Chair, follow up, please. My question is, because we've had this come up where agencies have done it, but they have to come back to us. They raise the fee, but they'd come back to us to approve it. But I don't understand this language. Is that correct, that they're going to set?
I can have the
Mr. Rocco.
Mr. Rocco.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wisner, there are several mechanisms to have fee increases. One is by administrative rule, and then, as you indicated, the agency will have to come back and have that ratified at the next session. So it would be in the 18th session they'd have to come back and bring the level of that fee to you, and you would have to then approve or not approve it.
Thank you.
Any additional discussion? Any objection to the motion before the committee? Please note Senator Gerard. Motion carries. Close that work session, open a work session. HB 2684 relating to residential facilities. Representative Rayfield.
House Bill 2684 deals with the requirements related to residential training facilities or training homes serving people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. The recommended amendment replaces the original bill and requires that provider rate increases result in comparable wage increases for direct support professionals. It also increases annual licensing fees from $20 to $50 and mandates the submission of a staffing survey to the Department of Human Services. The additional fee revenue will be used by DHS to provide statewide online training for direct support professionals. No budget adjustment is needed. The Human Services Subcommittee recommends that House Bill 2684 be amended by the Dash 3 amendment and be reported out. Do pass as amended.
Discussion. Any objection to the motion? Okay. Please note Senator Hansel, Senator Thompson, Senator Girard, Representative Huffman, Representative Wisnant. Seeing no others, motion carries. Close on work session, open on work session, HB 2742 relating to wildfire damage housing relief account. Representative McLean.
Thank you. And by the way, Mr. Chair, I voted wrong on that last one, I understand. So this has not been the most attentive hearing by me. All right, here we go. The wildfire damage housing relief account program was established in 2015 to assist lower income households that suffer a loss of housing due to a wildfire. House Bill 2742 makes changes to income limitations for receipt of financial assistance from the wildfire damage housing relief account from 75% of federal poverty guidelines to 200%. The bill also changes the maximum amount of the grant that may be awarded by the Housing and Community Services Department from $5,000 to $7,000. There is no fiscal impact to the Housing and Community Services Department associated with these policy changes. The Transportation and Economic Development Subcommittee recommends House Bill 2742 be reported out to pass.
Okay. Discussion. Any objections to the motion? Seeing none, motion carries. Close out work session, open a work session, HB 2992, relating to criminal records checks for schools. Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. HB 2992 requires public school districts or public charter schools and permits private schools to adopt and implement a policy to require volunteers who have direct unsupervised contact with school children to undergo a background check. The bill also expands existing school volunteer and employment background check law to permit the option of a nationwide criminal records check conducted Department of Education. The fiscal impact to school districts is anticipated to be a minimal, and $442,500 in other funds. Expenditure limitation will be included in the ODE budget to account for the potential increase in criminal background checks conducted by the agency. The Ed Sub recommends HB 2992 be amended by the Dash A3 and be reported out due pass. Thank you.
Okay, discussion of the motion before the committee. Any objections to the motion before the committee? Seeing none, motion carries. Close out work session. Open a work session, HB 3261, relating to health care provider incentives. Senator Steiner Hayward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 3261 requires the Oregon Health Policy Board to conduct an assessment of the health care workforce needs in Oregon and to report to the legislature each year. It also charges the board with evaluating the effectiveness of provider incentive programs. Based on those assessments, the board will determine how to allocate monies in the healthcare provider incentive fund among various incentive and workforce training programs. For the 2017-19 biennium, specific allocations from the healthcare provider incentive fund are set out for specific incentive programs, as well as workforce training programs if funding is available. Based on current budgets and budget plans, the incentive programs will be funded at current service level, with $3.2 million general fund available at OHSU to fund their two programs for the first year, and $13.8 million in the Oregon Health Authority. Up to $1 million is allocated in the bill for administrative expenses, and that is anticipated to cover the cost of administering the programs and doing the evaluations. The Human Services Subcommittee recommends House Bill 3261 be amended by the Dash A13 amendment and be reported out due pass as amended.
discussion of the motion before the committee? Any objections to the motion before the committee? Seeing none, motion carries. Colleagues, people in the audience, we have two subcommittees that need to meet at 1 o'clock, and they have a lot of agenda to get through, both of them. So we will be recessing at this time until 5 o'clock, when we will consider the remaining bills on the agenda. My apologies to you if you're waiting here hoping that one of those would come up. But due to the delay by the Senate, we're not able to get to some of the other bills. And so we will be back here at 5 o'clock.
Around when you need one.
That?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
As a reminder, Ways and Means Human Services is meeting at 4:30. We do not yet know which room.
Okay. And you do anticipate you will be done by 5 o'clock?
We do anticipate. To the best of my knowledge, we only have two bills to consider.
That we are adjourned.
Yeah.
Joint Committee on Ways and Means for June 29th, 2017. As you will recall, we recessed this meeting earlier in the day. The last bill that we completed was HB 3261. The next bill on the agenda is HB 3276, relating to health care. Senator Steiner Hayward, I am opening a work session.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 3276 prohibits insurers from restricting coverage of health services necessary to combat disease outbreak or epidemic. In addition, the bill directs the Public Health Director to convene a task force to make recommendations for legislative changes to improve student health insurance coverage. The task force will also consider preparation for future public health emergencies by recommending changes to public health policies relating to vaccinations. The Public Health Director must report the findings and recommendations to the legislature by October 30th, 2017. The cost to the Oregon Health Authority is indeterminate but small. It will depend on the number of members, number of meetings, and scope of work undertaken. The Human Services Subcommittee recommends House Bill 3276 be reported out due pass.
Discussion of the motion before the committee. Any objection to the motion being before the committee? Seeing none, motion carries. Open a work session. HB 3391, relating to reproductive health care. Representative Williamson.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. House Bill 3391 requires health benefit plan coverage of specified health care services, drugs, devices, products, and procedures related to reproductive health, all without cost sharing. It requires the Oregon Health Authority to implement a program to reimburse the cost of services related to reproductive health to individuals who would be eligible for medical assistance except for immigration status. This program also includes medical coverage for these same individuals for 60 days after birth. Certain exemptions apply for plans sold to religious employers as well as for abortion services if an insurer excludes that benefit in all its plans during the year. The recommended amendment directs OHA to design a program to provide statewide access to abortion coverage for Oregon residents enrolled in health plans where abortion is excluded from coverage. The agency will report to the legislature by November 1st, 2017. An appropriation of $10,195,935 general fund is also included. The Human Services Subcommittee recommends House Bill 3391 be amended by the -A10 amendment and reported out due pass as amended.
Discussion of the motion before the committee. Representative Stark and then Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Co-Chair Devlin. I actually have a series of questions that would likely go toward the agency.
Is there an agency representative here?
Or
LFO
legal
analysts? I can do both.
Okay. Well, I'll start with one of the first question. They can decide who comes up. Throughout committee, I kept hearing people refer to that this was in conflict with federal law with the Weldon Amendment, and I'm curious what the response to that is and how it, you know, whether our building is deemed it in conflict with federal law or not.
Okay. Mr. Rocco, would it be better to have the agency to respond to that, or would it be better to have legislative counsel respond to that?
Mr. Chair, that's a good question.
That's a good answer.
I like that.
Okay, would the agency want to attempt to respond to that?
Council.
Please come forward. If not, I will ask Legislative Council to have someone here by the time you finish up your questions or later to answer the question.
Chair Devlin, Co-Chair Nathanson, members of the committee. The agency is probably not the best party to answer
Your name,
Justin Black from the Oregon Health Authority. The agency is probably not the best person to answer that question.
Okay. Yeah, I believe there may be other questions that you might be the most appropriate to answer. So, Representative Stark, would you please ask your other questions? We're trying to get legislative counsel here.
Thank you, Co-Chair Devlin. Well, I'll jump into the money part and come back to the legal part in just a couple minutes. So, at $10.1 million roughly, that we're planning on using, and it refers to using this for abortions. And I'm curious, out of the, how much of that is going to go, do we anticipate is going to go to actually ending the life of preborn humans?
Representative Stark, Co-Chair Devlin, Co-Chair Nathanson. Our fiscal estimates that the total cost for the 1719 biennium is just under $500,000.
So, just to clarify, so out of the $10.1 million, $500,000 is likely to go toward abortions, is what you're estimating?
Correct.
Okay. And I'm curious, why not, this is a general question, why not just cover everything else in the bill, all the other health things, and not have that portion of $500,000 in the bill? Or can you tell me what the rest of it's going to and why we don't just stop at the rest of it?
Representative Stark, co-chairs Devlin and Nathanson, I think that bill calls for a number of procedures to be covered. So we have preconception care, well women visits, contraceptive services, and a number of other services that are covered in the bill, including abortion. So it is included as part of that.
I think I have one more for him. Thank you, Co-Chair, for allowing me to ask the questions. And it was my understanding that there was an amendment along the way that gave a carve-out for Providence. Can you explain what the Providence carve-out is, how that interplays with the Weldon Amendment, or just what that carve-out is and what it is not, what others are not receiving?
Representative Stark, Co-Chair Devlin and Nathanson. I'm not sure. The agency did not draft that amendment. So my understanding of the amendment for the carve-out is for the agency has been directed to come up with a way to cover abortion services for women who are otherwise covered by a plan that is exempted, similar to how PEB covers abortions for women that are covered by Providence currently.
And my other questions would probably be for legal counsel because it's clarification of the religious exemption.
Okay. My understanding is counsel is coming, so if it's okay, Representative, I will go to some of the other questions
and then come
back to you. Representative Huffman and then Senator Manning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I strongly oppose this bill, and the irony of following 3391 with my coverall kids is not lost on me.
Senator Manning.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. My district is one of the few that are very unique in terms of demographics. I have urban and rural, and a lot of the women that live in the rural areas in my district, and perhaps in some of the others, we find that health care or access to health care for women is very limited. I, as a former police officer, I have investigated a lot of different things. And many times people have to make choices. I am not a medical doctor, so when a woman chooses to do what her body is between her physician, and her God. So I think that it's necessary that we provide a means that provide medical necessity or availability, whatever the case is that a woman chooses. I think that if we focus on one small aspect of medical coverage for women, we are missing out on a bigger picture in terms of men's reproductive health care. There's not a question that I know that there are any opposition to men's reproductive health care. I don't understand why we would want to choose or treat women's ability to deal with their reproductive health care
any difference why we spot shine a spotlight on them, as they are different and have no control over their own bodies. I think that we need to make sure that every Oregonian, and as a matter of fact, everybody in the United States has equal access to any kind of medical coverage or treatment that is available. I think it is the right thing to do, and that we have to stand up in this age. We, in this legislation in the Senate, we passed the Equal Pay Act. All 30 senators signed off on it, which means that women, minorities, and everyone else is granted equal access, equal pay. Why are we bickering about trying to draw a line between women's access to health care and not even have a discussion about men's access to health care, reproductive health care? Thank you. Yes. This is a good bill. Should pass.
Representative McClain.
Thank you, Senator. I do believe that Senator Manning's expression is answered in a very clear, thoughtful way. But I don't believe that his intent of his question was to provoke the sort of philosophical, spiritual, fundamental argument that has divided our nation. So when you ask that question, Senator, I'm assuming it's rhetorical and you don't really want me to defend a pro-life view.
If I may, absolutely. It was a rhetorical, just to have a point of thought.
Please go ahead. Since it was asked, I'll permit it. Go ahead, Senator Manning.
It was a rhetorical.
I would say this, Mr. Chair. It is difficult to be accused of somehow being discriminatory if one objects to a procedure that ends a human life. So, I think it's clear that this bill, whether intended or not, will certainly illustrate for our state and this legislature the division all over our nation. I wonder why it's here. But, Senator, I'm not here, nor anyone else, voting no because we're discriminatory. But many of us believe that a human life is ended with an abortion procedure. A human life. And if that human life is 8 months in the womb, we believe it deserves some sort of thought or protection before it's terminated. Your question compelled me to stand up and at least articulate that my no vote is not based upon any form of racism or discrimination or anything like that, but a seriously, deeply held belief that human life deserves protection. And that's why I'm a no vote, Senator, not because I'm discriminatory.
I will go, I don't see their hands. I will go back to Representative Stark. Legislative Council is now here.
Thank
if you could pose the question again.
Yes, thank you, Co-Chair Devlin. I have a couple questions for you. Thank you for joining us. First one is, I've heard several people mention or reference that this is in violation of federal law, specifically relating to the Weldon Amendment. Can you state your opinion as to whether that is or is not the case and how this bill deals with that?
Committee co-chairs, members of the committee, Lori Freeman from Office of Legislative Counsel. There are a couple of provisions in this bill that were used as a sort of an off-ramp to avoid any violation of the Weldon Amendment. If you give me a second, I'll find them. Somewhere. first one is on page 3, lines 43 to the end, subsection 9, which creates an exemption for a religious employer who does not wish to include coverage for contraceptives or abortion procedures that are contrary to the religious employer's religious tenets.
May I interrupt? My next question is specifically on that. Can I?
Yes, please proceed.
Thank you, Co-Chair Devlin. I apologize for interrupting, but since you were at that spot so before you moved on, my next question is, how is a religious employer defined? And I understand I've gone and read the statute there. I've had people express concern that it was primarily focused on just churches and did not include, so I'm curious, religious employer, does that include faith-based nonprofits? Does that include Christian schools, colleges, and universities? Are those religious employers that would be exempt from this based on that religious exemption?
Committee co-chairs, Representative Stark, religious employer, I don't think is, oh, here we go, is defined on page 1 on line 13, and it refers back to 743A066, which I believe is the same exception that that exists for religious employers for coverage of contraceptions, but I'm not 100%. And basically, under the Constitution, you can't really look into whether or not a person's religious beliefs are legitimate. You have to accept that a person who has a religious belief, regardless of whether or not it's a established church, has the religious belief. So I don't think it would be limited to just churches or church-based institutions.
Thank you.
And then the second one is on page 4, starting on line 3. And this is a provision that is specifically addressed to the Weldon Amendment. It says if the department concludes that enforcement of the section may adversely affect the allocation of federal funds, the department may grant an exception to the requirements to the minimum extent necessary to ensure the continued receipt of federal funds.
So we can undo it if we find out we are in violation.
Thank you. With respect to if there's an individual employer that says I'm being discriminated against because of my religious beliefs or for whatever reason, the department would have the authority to carve out exceptions for that employer or that insurer.
I just have a final comment?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time. Appreciate it.
Representative.
So there are several sponsors of this bill here, and based off of what LC just said as far as the religious employer exemption, please correct me if I'm wrong, because based on what she just said, it is my understanding that the intent of this, for when we say religious employer, would include the faith-based nonprofits, the Christian high schools and colleges and universities. That's my understanding of what she just said. Please correct me before we go on. That is not the intent?
No, I'm agreeing with you.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure.
That's my understanding as well.
Okay. I wanted to make sure that was on the record there. And just a general comment. You know, when we make comments about making sure every Oregonian has health care, you know, the next bill is about that. Make sure every Oregonian has access to health. We have to make sure, I really believe that we need to make sure that we don't forget the unborn Oregonian. If we are saying that someone in Oregon who is conceived in Oregon, especially someone who is a living human being inside of a womb, should have open access to health care and shouldn't have their life terminated. This bill is going to provide $500,000 to make sure that happens. At an average cost of $1,500 per abortion, that's at least 333 abortions that this could pay for. That's 333 abortions, 333 humans that will not have access to life because it's going to be terminated before they make it outside of the womb. Well, they have life. It will be taken from them before they can access any other health care. The health care that the rest of this bill sets up and spends lots of money. Hey, the rest of this bill, fantastic. The post-birth care, wonderful. Let's put a lot of money into making sure these children are healthy, but let's start making sure they're healthy before they're born and that we don't terminate it. And then, as was heard in the hearing the other day, and then call that cost savings. because that's what they testified to in the subcommittee the other day. So I strongly urge a no. We could do this without spending that $500,000 on terminating human life.
Additional discussion? Yes, Senator Steiner-Hayward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As most of you know, I'm a person of very deep faith myself. I have a different faith tradition than many of you in this room, but I am a person for whom my faith is critically important, and living by the tenets of my faith is critically important. And I feel blessed to live in a country where religious discrimination is not accepted and is, in fact, protected in our Constitution. In my faith tradition, regardless of how one thinks of an unborn child, a fetus, regardless of when you think life begins, the mother's life always takes precedence. Always. And so if we don't have access to abortion services, then women with my perspective, women in my faith tradition and other faith traditions with a mother's life, because there are two lives involved here. And I respect your point of view, Representative. You and I have a close relationship. I value the perspective of everybody who's going to vote no on this bill, and I appreciate your willingness to speak out for your beliefs, just as I'm speaking out for mine. And I hope that people understand that we are a diverse society and we come from different faith traditions that take different views about which life takes precedence, regardless of when life begins. And the last thing I would say, sir, is that the comments we made about cost savings had to do with the contraception pieces, not about the abortion. The comments about cost savings came entirely preventing unintended pregnancies. That was what they were focused on. It was not on cost savings associated with abortion. It was on preventing unplanned pregnancies and helping women choose when to have their families. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Williamson.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I just want to go back to Representative Stark's Weldon Amendment question about employers, since I don't have the statute in front of me, and say I know the intent is to mirror the current statute. And so I know Representative Steiner-Hayward and I both said, yes, you know, we have an understanding of that in the way that you stated it, but I don't have the statute in front of me. So I just wanted to make it clear for the record that the intent is to mirror the language that's currently in the statute, not to expand or contract from that. So.
Any additional discussion? And since I have legislative counsel here, and I know you've having to give an oral opinion literally on the fly, I will ask legislative counsel to give a more, at least a written opinion available later when this goes to the floor. It'll be in the House, I believe, sometime early next week. So I'll ask that so that's available to people. Any additional discussion?
Thank you.
Senator Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I guess I've been kind of pondering here a little bit. I guess in one respect, I actually agree with Senator Manning. Every American should have access to health care. But I would add, including the unborn and ending their life is not good health care.
Okay. Anything additional? Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Steiner-Hayward brought up a point that I guess I'd like clarification on. Does the bill only provide funding for abortion to save a mother's life? You were drawing the comparison
if I may, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Thank you very much. Representative Huffman, your point's well taken. At least in my faith tradition, the definition of saving a mother's life can include a wide range of issues, causing serious bodily harm, you know, kidney failure or organ failure included in that, serious psychological damage is included in that. And that's for a woman and her doctor and her family and her clergy to decide. And the definition may be different for different people. And I'm not asking for moral relativism. I'm not asking for any of that. I'm just saying that I would never presume to judge someone who has a different perspective on elective termination of pregnancy than I do. And I would not choose to presume on another person's right to make healthcare decisions for themselves and their families in keeping with their own moral principles and their own well-being and their family's well-being.
I completely appreciate your perspective, Representative, and I hope I'm not sounding disrespectful because I have no intention to sound so. But that's how I think about this. That's how my faith tradition, and that's how some of our greatest sages have described it in their writings.
Okay. Any further discussion? Seeing none, Mr. Rocco, will you call the roll? Thank you, Mr. Blair.
No, it's not. I mean, it's for a
portion
period.
Yeah,
I get that.
I think that's what it is.
Yeah,
Representative
Wisner?
No.
Okay. Representative Huffman?
No.
Representative McLean?
No.
Representative Williamson?
Yes.
Representative Gumbert?
Yes.
Representative Smith-Warner?
Aye.
Representative Stark?
No.
Representative Holy?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Rayfield?
Yes.
Co-Vice Chair Smith?
No.
Co-Chair Nathanson?
Aye.
Senator Monroe?
Aye.
Senator Drodd?
No.
Senator Thompson?
No.
Senator Steiner Hayward?
Yes.
Senator Hansel?
No.
Senator Roblin?
Aye.
Senator Frederick?
Yes.
Senator Manning?
Aye.
Senator DeBoer?
No.
Co-Vice Chair Winters?
No.
Co-Vice Chair Johnson?
Aye.
Co-Chair Devlin?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Motion carries. Close that work session, open a work session, HB 3391, HSB 558, relating to improving the health of Oregon children. Senator Steiner Hayward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 558 modifies eligibility requirements for the Health Care of All Oregon Children program to make all children who reside in Oregon eligible for medical assistance regardless of immigration status if family income is at or below 300% of the federal poverty guidelines. The bill also requires the Oregon Health Authority to establish a work group to advise the agency on outreach and marketing strategies for this program. The recommended amendment changes the effective date for the changes to the program to January 1st, 2018, an appropriation of $36,113,214 general fund dollars is included. The Human Services Subcommittee recommends SB 558 be amended by the dash two amendment and be reported out due pass as amended.
Okay. Additional discussion? Any objections to the motion? We'll see. Representative Stark. I can do this.
Okay.
I'll try roll call if I need it. Representative Stark, Representative McLean, Representative Wisner, Representative Smith, Senator Hansel, Senator Girard, Senator Thompson, Senator DeBoer. Motion carries. Close that work session, open work session, SB 942 relating to child safety. Senator Winters.
Senate Bill 542 requires the Department of Human Services to make specific findings in a child abuse investigation, and it requires investigation to be conducted in accordance with statute. Investigation findings must be made as founded, unfounded, or cannot be determined. This requirement is in place until certain statewide metrics and program goals are met. The recommended amendment removes the requirement that DHS conduct exit interviews within 14 days of removing a child in substitute care from a placement. This changes the fiscal impact to minimum. The Human Services Subcommittee recommends Senate Bill 942 be amended by the dash three amendments and be reported out due pass as amended.
Discussion of the motion before the committee. Any objections to the motion before the committee? Seeing none, motion carries. Close that work session, open the work session. SB 1050 relating to sentencing for serious sex crimes. Senator Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Senate Bill 1050 provides a presumptive sentence of life imprisonment without the possibility of release for a person sentenced for certain serious sex crimes if the person has a prior conviction for the same crime or an equivalent crime in another jurisdiction. Currently, individuals convicted of these crimes are sentenced to a mandatory minimum of 25 years in prison. The Public Safety Subcommittee notes that this bill has an indeterminate fiscal impact, but the Public Defense Commission could incur additional costs for defending cases with the increased penalty of life imprisonment. Your Public Safety Subcommittee recommends Senate Bill 1050 as reported out due pass.
Discussion of the motion before the committee. Any objection to the motion before the committee? Seeing none, motion carries.
close out work session, open a work session, HB 2198 relating to cannabis. Representative Rayfield.
House Bill 2198 establishes a nine-member Oregon Cannabis Commission within the Oregon Health Authority. The overall purpose of the commission is to determine a possible framework for the future governance of the Oregon medical marijuana program and the steps the state must take to ensure that research on cannabis and cannabis-derived products is being conducted for public purposes. The bill requires the commission to provide advice to OHA and the Oregon Liquor Control Commission with respect to the administration and enforcement of medical marijuana and develop long-term strategic plans for ensuring cannabis will remain a therapeutic and affordable option for people with debilitating medical conditions. The Commission must report its recommendations to the legislature by December 15, 2017. In order to support the Commission's responsibilities, the bill appropriates $250,000 general fund to OHA. The bill also modifies the statutes regulating marijuana grow sites, including allowing marijuana grow sites to transfer up to 20 pounds of usable marijuana per year to a recreational marijuana processor or wholesaler if certain conditions are met. The bill authorizes OLCC to issue an order to temporarily reduce or suspend the amount of marijuana that can be transferred into the recreational market by OMMP growers if supply exceeds customer demand and the market will not self-correct. Human Services Subcommittee recommends House Bill 2198 be amended by the Dash A40 amendment and be reported out due pass as amended.
Discussion of the motion before the committee.
Yes.
Yes, Representative McClain.
What's the amendment, Mr. Chair, that is proposed to be adopted right now?
The Dash 30.
Okay.
Dash 840.
Ms. Ames, will you come forward?
Mr. Chair, Representative, the recommended amendment is A40, but it's a combination. The subcommittee combined two amendments. Let me look real quick. The A37 was a conflict amendment from LC. There was a conflict with Senate Bill 1057 from earlier in session. And then the A39 was an amendment that we had from Ways and Means that added the appropriation. It also repealed the Advisory Committee on Medical Marijuana because that was just duplicative of the new commission.
Okay, Matt Phillip. All right, so... So the provision that allows OLCC to regulate amount, if to reduce or suspend the amount of that can be transferred into the recreational market by overproduction, that's still in the bill? Because you know what? I'll just vote.
If it's in the bill, it's in the A and gross.
All right. I'll just vote no and figure it out by the time it comes to the floor. All right. Thank you.
Just for way of clarification, an issue came up earlier in this week, and just so that people know this, and I think they do, when we have multiple amendments in committee, then before it comes usually to full, they are actually put into a final amendment. So it's only a single amendment that you are adopting. So that's Representative Wisdom.
Thank you for that clarification, Mr. Co-Chair. Mrs. Ames, so then the Dash 37 amendment was the one that allows cities and counties to opt out. So that's N39, which is the current one. Is that correct?
The Dash 37 is a conflict amendment. So that was in Senate Bill 1057, or this bill, but the two didn't work together. So it simply changed the language to allow that piece of the law to work with the other bill. It wasn't a new piece that was added as a result of that amendment.
Thank you.
Okay. Additional discussion. Objections to the motion before the committee. Representative McClain. Let's see. Okay. Senator Johnson. We may have an issue. We got three.
Winters wasn't objecting.
Four. Well, we still may have an issue.
We have two D's.
I got two D's. Let's see. I got three, four.
5, I'm still one short.
If you need it, Mr. Co-Chair, but expect a no on the floor.
Okay. Do you have that? Do you have that, Mr. Rocco?
Mr. Chair, I have Senators Monroe, Girard, Thompson, Hansel, and DeBoer voting no, and Representative McLean voting no.
Okay. And Senator Johnson doing it as a courtesy, correct?
Correct.
That's
correct.
A yes.
And Winters was a
courtesy. And Winters is a courtesy also.
I have that.
So motion carries.
Yes, sir.
Close that work session. Interesting debate. Open a work session on HB 2310 relating to provision of public health services.
House Bill 2310 modifies and clarifies the requirements establishment in House Bill 3100 from the 2015 session for modernizing the state's public health system. The bill modifies the timeline and process for submitting local public health implementation plans and clarifies formula distribution language. It also clarifies how and when a county could relinquish their local public health authority to the state. The recommended amendment removes requirements for implementation of specific parts of the statute, thus eliminating a direct fiscal impact. However, it is anticipated that some funding will be included to begin implementing this program. The amendment also removes the section authorizing OHA to establish fees relating to data requests. The Human Services Subcommittee recommends House Bill 2310 be amended by the -A5 amendment and be reported out due pass as amended.
Okay, discussion. Senator Johnson.
A question of the carrier. In committee, what were the discussions under which a county public health agency could relinquish their responsibilities to the state?
There was, I believe, one party that did come up and mention if more counties relinquish their ability, if we didn't fully fund or if we didn't fund all the way the actual public health modernization, there could be an incentive for folks to relinquish, and then getting them back into the system could be problematic. That was the only discussion that we had within committee.
Follow-up?
Yes.
That's my question, because some of us represent counties that are struggling financially, and the maintenance of public health functions may be problematic, just the same way that other functions, public safety, may be problematic. And I couldn't understand from the explanation that you gave that we were trying to prevent that from happening with appropriate distribution of funds. I just don't understand the relationship between the state and public health agencies and the possibility that they could relinquish to the state.
So the underlying OHA budget actually applied $5 million towards public health modernization. I think the hope was that we might be able to find more dollars towards that, but I don't think at this point. And I will leave that up to the big co-chairs on the final decisions on anything like that.
Okay. Thank you.
Discussion.
I'm in, right? Did I vote?
We haven't voted yet. We're going to vote.
Oh.
Any additional discussion?
Representative McLean.
Any objection? Seeing none, motion carries. Close that work session. Open a work session on HB 2741 relating to wildfire damage housing relief account. Representative McLean did
you,
a similar bill this earlier today.
We did. Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2741 appropriates general fund to the wildfire damage housing relief account with the Department of Housing and Community Services. This program was created in 2015 to assist lower-income households that suffer a loss of housing due to wildfire. The subcommittee recommends $150,000 for this purpose in the 2017-19 biennium. The Transportation and Economic Development Subcommittee recommends House Bill 2741 be amended by the -1 amendment and be reported out due pass as amended.
Discussion. Any objections to the motion? Seeing no objections, motion carries. Close that work session. Open a work session. HB 3063 relating to housing for individuals with mental illness. Senator Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. House Bill 3063 establishes an advisory committee to the Housing and Community Services Department and gives direction regarding the disbursement of funds for the development of community-based housings for individuals with mental illness and individuals with substance abuse disorders. In 2015, the legislature approved $20 million in lottery bonds for affordable housing housing for those with mental illness and substance abuse issues. The balance of uncommitted funds is expected to be about $9.2 million after the next round of competitive awards are approved. There is no cost to the Housing and Community Services Department associated with the remaining disbursement and oversight of these funds, and the advisory group can be convened within existing department resources. The Human Services Subcommittee recommends House Bill 3063 be amended by the Dash 3 amendments and be reported out to pass as amended.
Discussion of the motion before the committee. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I have a question for staff.
Yes, which staff? Please come forward.
Michelle. So my question is in 2015, we collectively observed that Housing and Community Services had below standard performance measures as it related to getting projects done in a timely manner at a reasonable square footage cost. We're 2 years later. Have those improved?
Co-chairs and Representative Smith, we did, you'll recall in the Housing and Community Services Department budget, approve some changes to their agency performance measures. So going forward, it'll be a bit of an apples to oranges comparison. With regard to this particular program, they did have some difficulty in terms of garnering appropriate, I shouldn't say interest, but expertise in terms of being able to develop this particular type of housing. And I will say that they have provided workshop opportunities to help potential developers to meet the requirements of the notice of funding availability. They are expecting another round of approvals in July.
So, Mr. Co-Chairman, yes. I would just share with you, I don't work directly with these programs, but I do work with folks who do utilize them. I 100% support the purpose of these programs, but this agency is incompetent in utilizing these programs effectively and appropriately and getting the dollars out in a timely manner and doing it in a cost-effective manner. Making sure that all Oregonians know about these programs and those that do know about them, and not having the rules changed on them. And so, again, I'm going to give a yes vote to this, but at some point in time, we collectively may want to hold this department accountable for the extraordinarily poor way in which they manage the implementation of these dollars. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
Okay, additional questions, Senator Johnson.
I just feel compelled to respond, having spent a considerable amount of time during this session with the new director, Margaret Salazar. I think we have a new sheriff in Dodge. She has been incredibly impressive in some of the hearings. I think she's well aware of the fact, if for no other reason than I've ground on her a lot about it, the per square foot costs, the regulatory burdens in developing some of this housing. We, the legislature, have heaped an awful lot on this agency and expect them to perform immediately. One of the things that they're in the process of doing is pulling together an inventory of what exists. They're working on trying to get more land into available development status. And so while I would agree with you wholeheartedly that past administrations in that agency have been woefully unprepared to meet the housing crisis that we have, I would just respectfully ask that we as a body give Director Salazar a shot. She comes with huge experience. She has been responsive through all of our budget hearings. And I hope, Representative, that we'll be sitting here a year from now and you'll be able to sing the praises of an agency that I think has a good shot at turning itself around under her very capable leadership.
So Mr. Co-Chair, yes. I would just share very briefly, knowing that the good senator and the good Representative Gomberg have their thumb on this issue and are working closely with the department, my concerns have been alleviated. Thank you.
Oh, Representative Gomberg.
Well, thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I just wanted to say I was sitting next to the good senator when she was grinding, and she's right on point.
Okay, my concerns I don't really are think that just made the sine die tank.
Okay. Additional discussions. Objections to the motion before the committee. Seeing none, motion carries. Close out work session, open a work session, HB 3078, relating to public safety. Senator Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. House Bill 3078 changes and modifies several public safety programs and sentencing for crimes. It increases the limit for short-term trance leave from prison from 90 to 120 days. I want to put on the record and explain the changes to 120 days is may. It is not shall. It is also the DOC has to recommend, and then also the receiving county has to agree. Just need to put that on the record because there's always the question of whether or not it's mandatory. It is not mandatory. It modifies two measures, 57 crimes, theft in the first degree, and identity theft. Both of these are nonviolent and it's first-time offense. I need to put that on the record. To permit shorter presumptive sentences with stricter supervision. And it expands the number of offenders that may be eligible to participate in the Family Sentencing Alternative Pilot Program. The Criminal Justice Commission is directed to study the impact of these changes on prison use, recidivism, and public safety, and report back to the legislature annually. The Public Safety Subcommittee recommends the addition of $7 million general fund for justice reinvestment, with the funding to go with downward departure prison diversion programs provided by counties. It also recommends $1 million from the general fund for domestic and sexual violence services and programs. Your Public Safety Subcommittee recommends House Bill 3078 be amended by the Dash 8 amendments and be reported out due pass as amended.
Okay. Discussion. Yes, Representative Wisner.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I've been lobbied on both sides on this bill. I wish I could vote to support the $7 million and the $1 million investment. I also understand I could support the 9 and 120. I'm not convinced on the reducing the two measure 57, so I'm afraid I'll have to be a no.
Okay. Additional discussion? Yes, Senator Johnson.
With all respect to the sponsors of the bill, some of whom are in this room, I cannot support this bill either. I believe we're disrespecting the will of Oregonians by eroding sentences for identity theft and theft in the first degree passed by the voters in 2008 in ballot measure 57. Moreover, I think that in the name of economy, we are sacrificing safety for savings. If the recent brutal shooting in Gresham is instructive, I believe that this bill will lead to more victimization by violent criminals. I will be a no.
Okay. Any additional discussion by the committee? Yes, Senator Hansel.
I, too, have a deep respect for the framers of this measure. I, too, have been lobbied on both sides. Part of my dilemma is that the sheriffs in my district, the chiefs, the district attorneys, all of those that we've worked really closely with in my district are opposed to it, and I'll be a no vote.
Okay. Any additional discussion? Mr. Rocco, will you call the roll?
Representative Wisner?
No.
Representative Huffman?
No.
Representative Williamson?
Yes.
Representative Gunberg?
Yes.
Representative Smith-Warner?
Aye.
Representative Stark?
No.
Representative Hovey?
Aye.
Vice Chair Rayfield?
Yes.
Co-Vice Chair Smith?
No.
Co-Chair Nathanson?
Aye.
Senator Monroe?
Aye.
Senator Gerard?
Nope.
Senator Thompson?
No.
Senator Steiner-Hayward?
Aye.
Senator Hansel?
No.
Senator Roblin?
Aye.
Senator Frederick?
Yes.
Senator Manning?
Aye.
Senator DeBoer?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Winters?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Johnson?
No.
Co-Chair Devlin?
Aye.
Motion carries?
Motion carries. Close that work session. Open a work session. HB 3440 relating to drug.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. House Bill 3440 is part of our continued effort to address the opioid crisis in Oregon. This bill removes special training requirements from the statutes governing prescribing, dispensing, and distributing naloxone, also known as Narcan, and requires OHA to publish and report information related to opioids and the opioids and opiates. It also makes changes to the prescription drug monitoring program and expands the pool of practitioners in the program to include practitioners from all states.
The opioid crisis in Oregon is very, very serious. People are dying in record numbers, and this bill will give us more data about opioids and opiate prescriptions, help us train practitioners in best practices, and make life-saving naloxone more accessible. The Human Services Subcommittee recommends House Bill 3440 be amended by the -A7 amendment and be reported out due pass as amended. And, Mr. Co-Chair, I'd like to thank Senator Steiner Hayward for her help on this bill and her work on this issue with me.
Any additional discussion? Senator Johnson.
I find the irony of your comments in that you've indicated how many Oregonians are dying as a result of opiate addiction. I support this bill wholeheartedly, but I find it interesting that in another bill before the body, we're talking about decriminalizing amounts of exactly these same opiates that are killing people.
Okay. Any additional discussion? Objections to the bill? Seeing none, motion carries. Close out work session, open a work session. SB 106 relating to public accountability and administering the public records law. Senator Manning.
Well, let's lighten the load a little bit, get a little humor in the room. Senate Bill 106A creates the Office of Public Records Advocate and Public Records Advisory Council. The public record advocate will facilitate dispute resolutions between state agencies and those representing public records or requesting public records. The advocates will be also be available for dispute resolution services upon request of the city or a person seeking records from a city. In addition, the advocate will provide training to the state agencies. The bill advocates $633,187 in general funds to the Department of Administrative Services for the advocate and one deputy. The General Government Subcommittee recommends SB 106 as amended by the A17 amendment and be reported out due pass as amended.
Discussion of the motion before the committee. Yes, Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Colleagues, this is one leg of the three-legged public record stool. I had to say that.
Thank you.
Compelling.
We've been waiting. I know.
I do encourage the legislature as we move forward to keep an eye on Senate Bill 106, Senate Bill 481, and House Bill 2101, and make sure that they are working properly in a transparent, sunshine manner to help Oregonians gain access to public records and the public records system of management that the three bills collectively set up.
Additional discussion. Senator Johnson.
I'm going to support this bill, and I agree with Representative Huffman. He testified in a committee that I sit on this afternoon about the three legs of the stool. I wish that this bill did not deal with the dispute after the failure of a good public records system. But I think the three bills in harmonized will go a long ways towards more transparency in government.
Additional discussion. Yes,
thank
Senator
you, Mr.
DeBoer.
Chair, I will be a no on this. The cost in two people probably won't. This will grow. And I also know the Secretary of State's office has offered to do this within their budget. And I know that the Attorney General, if you can't get public records, is pretty quick to act. So based on the financial of this alone, I will be a no.
Any additional discussion? Yes, Senator Hansel.
Just had a question. Based upon what Senator DeBoer just said, was the Secretary of State's office, was that a part of the discussion when this moved forward? Can anybody answer that? The fact that already existing, we don't have to create anything new. That office can already do it and save over $600,000.
Senator Manning or Representative Smith, do you wish to comment?
What? No.
Honest man.
I believe that the LFO was available.
In the interest of honesty, yes, my office was contacted by the Secretary of State with a sincere desire to perform this function. They did express the ability to perform this function, and they had made a request of me to advocate for that. In the end, my job is to serve as co-chair of a subcommittee and to follow the direction of my co-chairs, and that's what I did.
Mr. Co-chair, I was not contacted by the Secretary of State's office regarding this. I was under the impression that there was a little reversal, that the that at first the Secretary of State may have wanted but then didn't want it, so I don't know.
Okay. Any additional discussion? Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the Secretary of State did say that he could do this function. A lot of us really didn't want to get in between the governor and the Secretary of State as to who could do the job and who could do it better. Because they're both friends. And this bill was submitted first.
Any additional discussion? Yes, Senator Hansel.
Well, friends or not, it's costing the taxpayers over $600,000. Mm-hmm. That should be, at least for me, that's a determining factor. I'll be a no vote.
Senator Gomberg, or Representative Gomberg.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, and I do appreciate Representative Huffman's comments, but when this alternative suggestion was brought forward, I have to say I was a little bit startled that the Secretary of State's office has two people sitting around full-time with nothing else to do and could take over this function. I also need to add that the Secretary did come before the General Government Committee this week on another budget item, saying that they didn't have enough money at this point to get the current job done. So I'm a little surprised that they're prepared to take on additional responsibilities within this budget scenario.
Okay. Representative Rayfield.
From a policy perspective, the Secretary of State was looking to house this in the Archives Division. And if you know, looking at the, if you go through and read the bills, I think this is a better policy way to accomplish a goal in an effective manner than trying to basically fit, you know, square peg into a round hole, which is what I think the underlying proposal to jam this into the Archives Division was.
I guess there is a difference of opinion on the committee, which is not abnormal. I'm going to just do for the sake of Mr. Rocco, will you call the roll?
Representative Risner?
Yay. Yes.
Representative Helton?
Yes.
Representative Williamson?
Yes.
Representative Gomberg?
Yes.
Representative Smith-Warner?
Aye.
Representative Stark?
I think so. Yes.
Representative Bowlby?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Rayfield?
Yes.
Co-Vice Chair Smith?
Yes.
Co-Chair Nathanson?
Aye.
Senator Monroe?
Oh, yes.
Senator Gerard?
Oh, no.
Senator Thompson?
No.
Senator Steiner Hayward?
Aye.
Senator Hansel?
No.
Senator Rublin?
Aye.
Senator Frederick?
Yes.
Senator Manning?
Yes.
Senator DeBoer?
No.
Co-Vice Chair Winters?
Yes.
Co-Vice Chair Johnson?
Yes.
Co-Chair Dublin?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Motion carries. Thank you. Close out work session, open a work session, SB 256, relating to Willamette Falls Navigation Infrastructure. Senator Monroe.
Thank you. We're getting now to something that's fun and exciting. Senate Bill 256 establishes a 23-member commission to advise state, local, and regional government agencies on the Willamette Falls locks. Members of the commission are not entitled to compensation and may not be reimbursed for travel or other expenses. The recommended amendment appropriates $190,000 general fund to the Higher Education Coordinating Commission, HEC, to be distributed to the Oregon Solutions at Portland State University. The amendment provides, whereas, language related to the history of Willamette Falls, including whereas statements for both the Columbia River tribes and the Confederated Tribes of the Grand Ronde Community of Oregon. Your Transportation Economic Development Subcommittee recommends 256 be amended by the -6 amendment and reported out due pass as amended. And let me tell you a couple of things. First of all, we're talking about the second biggest waterfall in the United States in terms of volume. We're talking about restoring locks that'll make the Willamette River once again navigable up and down from Eugene to Portland. And also, it was interesting that there was a dispute between the Grand Ronde tribe and some of the Columbia River tribes. And Senator Johnson, by her deft negotiation with the tribes out in the hall, got them to come to agreement. And as a result, everybody is holding hands and singing Kumbaya.
That is not what I'm saying.
And this is an exciting time for me as a historian, because I look forward to the walkway above the falls that's going to be constructed and seeing the boats and ships once again ply up and down the full length of the Willamette. I urge your aye vote.
Discussion. Yes, Senator Hanson.
I think it was known as the 2017 Treaty of the West Hall.
Nicely done, Senator.
Actually, I think I stole Mr. Gomberg's.
Oh, okay. Any additional discussion? Objections to the motion? Seeing none, motion carries. Close that work session. Open a work session. SB 944 relating to behavioral health. Senator Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Senate Bill 944 directs the Oregon Health Authority to contract with an Oregon-based nonprofit organization with the expertise to operate a 24-hour call center dedicated to tracking and providing information about available placement settings for children and adolescents needing high acuity behavioral health services. The call center will also implement processes for service providers to submit data that can be used to assess and monitor daily statewide capacities for providing high acuity behavioral health services to children and adolescents, as well as recording when the first contact with the call center took place and the appropriate place. The bill appropriates $400,000 general fund to the Oregon Health Authority for this purpose. The Human Services Subcommittee recommends Senate Bill 944 be amended by the -3 amendments and be reported out due pass as amended.
Discussion. Senator Johnson.
A comment and a suggestion. The comment is, this is a wonderful bill. Having called Dr. George Brown at Emmanuel one night trying to get a juvenile out of Columbia Memorial's ER, she had been there for a week. There was not a juvenile bed anywhere to be found, and it was only through the generosity and humane response of Dr. Brown that we got her transferred from Astoria to Emmanuel in Portland. So I know how badly needed this is. I would hope that consideration would be given to already established call centers, those that are set up specifically for 24/7 service, and our veterans provider Lines for Life immediately comes to mind. There's no point in reinventing the wheel when we have trained professionals that are answering the phone and could easily do this without having to go find another vendor.
Additional discussion. Yes, Senator Steiner.
If I may, Senator Johnson, that's exactly it's either them or 211. Basically, there's no plan to reinvent the wheel. Okay, well, I'm not going to get into that debate, but Mr. Holton, the Executive Director of Lines for Life, was in the room when we heard this bill, and I know has been involved in the conversations.
Okay. Senator Johnson.
The last time I called 211, I was on hold for 47 minutes.
Okay. Well, I'm saying nobody plans to start anything new.
Okay. Additional discussion on the bill. Any objection to the bill? Or any objection to the motion before the committee? I'm sorry. Seeing none, motion carries. We will go to SB 978 relating to utilities. Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Colleagues, Senate Bill 978 requires the Public Utility Commission to investigate trends, technologies, and policy drivers in the electricity sector and directs the PUC to explore changes to the existing regulatory system and incentives that support developing industry trends and new policy objectives without compromising affordable rates, safety, or reliable service. The PUC will need to hire a limited duration utility and energy Energy Analyst 3 to conduct the study and report back to the legislature. The proposed amendment provides increased expenditure limitation for that purpose. The total fiscal impact to the PCC is $164,400 in the 17-19 biennium. Your Transportation and Economic Development Subcommittee recommends Senate Bill 978 be amended by the Dash 4 Amendment and be reported out due pass as amended.
Discussion of the motion before the committee. Any objection to the motion before the committee? Seeing none, motion carries. Before we adjourn, Mr. Rocco, can you give us a prospectus for tomorrow morning?
Mr. Chair, I believe we'll meet at the regular time on Friday at 9 o'clock, and currently have about 10 bills lined up, but we'll be getting more as the night goes on.
Okay, and they will be posted.
They'll be posted as quickly as we can.
With that, we will be back here tomorrow morning. We'll be adjourning. I do know that there were a number of issues before us this evening that people have very strong beliefs on. I do believe that we demonstrated we had a very civil debate on those issues, and I do understand just how strong those beliefs are. But with that, we are adjourned. I